And his reasons were not whimsical, in that they were logical. They were based on his lack of greediness for the kingdom. He had good qualities. He did not want to see religion ruined just for the sake of himself being placed, himself and his brothers, especially Yudhisthira, being placed as the king of the world. He foresaw a great evil for the world if this battle would take place, because with this type of fratricidal war, brother against brother, relative against relative, practically speaking, the entire Kshatriya race would be destroyed. And the Kshatriya's business is to provide structure in society. And without structure in society, all hell breaks loose. Without this criminality, this robbery, looting, murder, horrible things occur. All just to place one man as king, millions would have to die. And Arjuna saw himself having to suffer for millions of years, just to place himself and his family members as king and rulers of the world. For a few years of being king, he would have to suffer sinful reactions for millions of years. Is it worth it? And then, even if he was king, those whom he loved, who he would share his opulence with, would be dead. And therefore, what is the use of such a kingdom? That it is won at the cost of the lives of those who one loves. So for these reasons, for his compassion, for his good qualities, for his lack of greed, for so many good reasons, Arjuna has declined to fight. His mind has been overwhelmed with grief. Text 1, second chapter. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudan, Krishna, spoke the following words. Now when Dhritarashtra was relating when Sanjaya is relating all this to Dhritarashtra, when Dhritarashtra heard that Arjuna had taken his weapons and sat down on the chariot, what do you think Dhritarashtra was feeling? Very good. This is exactly good. But Sanjaya said, Uvacha Madhusudan, because Krishna is Madhusudan. He is the killer of the demon named Madhu. And just as Arjuna's doubts are compared to demons, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, so this calling, Sanjay calling Krishna Madhusudan, shows that Arjuna's doubts as to what he should do and thinking that he should not fight will all be destroyed by Madhusudan, the killer of the demon Madhu, the killer of doubts. So Krishna Madhusudan, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudan, Krishna, spoke the following words. Now after hearing all of Arjuna's arguments, which are shastric, which are logical, which are based on compassion, we might think that Krishna was very sympathetic. But Krishna said, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, Kutas tva kajmalamidam. Kutas means where from. Tva, unto you, kajmalam, this dirtiness. Idam, this lamentation. Vishame samapastitam. In this hour of crisis, how has this arrived? It is the time of the battle. It is the hour of crisis. You are being asked to lead the armies. I am also desiring this. It is your duty. From every angle you should be fighting, and now you are wondering and you are full of doubts and you are putting down your bow. Where is this impurity? Where is this dirtiness? Kutas tvam kazmalamidam. Where is this impurity come from? Anarya jushtam. This is not how an Aryan acts. This is not how one whose very culture is dedicated to spiritual upliftment. This is not how such a person acts. Asfargyam akitikaram Arjuna. That this will not lead you to swaga. It is aswaga. It will lead you away from heaven. And not only it will lead you away from heaven, it will lead you not kirti. Kirti means glories or glorious. Akirti, it will make you infamous or inglorious. So you will neither get heaven with this type of kajmalam, this dirtiness of the heart, surrendering to your weakness. You will never get heaven, nor will you get fame. So a Kshatriya, this is what a Kshatriya lives for in this life. He wants to get kirti, he wants to get glory, and his next life he wants to get swaga. So rather than getting glory and swaga, he will get a kirti, a swargyam. He will neither get glory nor get heavenly planets in the next life. His present would be ruined, and his future will be ruined. So Krishna immediately is beginning to chastise Arjuna. This will not help you. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life." Because the Aryan culture, this Vedic Sanatan Dharma culture, is based on gradual elevation to attain the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. It is not based on sense gratification, on just enjoying in this life. It is based on a long-term value. So therefore, Arjuna's logic and his reasons, his thinking, although it seems so logical, it is not based on the Aryan values, which we will hear throughout the rest of the Bhagavad Gita. They do not lead to higher planets, but they will lead you to infamy, Krishna tells Arjuna. If you act the way you are talking, you will not become elevated, you will become infamous. Klaivyam, Krishna continues. Klaivyam sma, ma, sma, gama bharata. This klaivyam means impotence, unmanliness. So Krishna immediately is slapping Arjuna across the face because he's a Kshatriya. And he said, "You're acting in a very unmanly way." Slap. Immediately he starts chastising him. Klaivyam ma sma gama parta naita tvai upapadyate. Chudram. What you are thinking is low class and petty. Riddhaya dobayam. Riddhaya dobayam means weakness in your heart. You are weak. You are low class. You are impotent. He's chastising him so heavily. Twakto tista. That means, get up, get up. Give this up and get up. Because he's sitting down on the chariot. Sometimes we see pictures like that where Arjuna is off the chariot and full of lamentation. But actually it is not accurate. Arjuna sat down on the chariot. Not off the chariot. He never got off the chariot. The picture should get off the wall probably though. And then he called them Parantapa, oh chastiser of the enemy. How is the chastiser of the enemy acting in such an impotent, weak, low-class way? So immediately he's insulting Arjuna, because even though he has not formally been accepted by Arjuna as his spiritual master, Krishna is taking this position immediately by insulting him, chastising him. You're acting improperly. O son of Prita, do not degrade, do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. You are a Kshatriya. You are the son of Pandu. You are in a famous dynasty of warriors. Do not yield to this. You are an Aryan. Give up this petty weakness of heart, Riddhya Dholavam, and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. So he's preparing Arjuna by slapping him something. He's preparing him to for Arjuna to surrender. In the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, Arjuna might argue that he would give up not giving up the battle due to weakness, because Krishna has said, Durvalyam, Riddhya, Durvalyam, and Klayavyam, etc., and Chudram. Arjuna might argue that he would give up the battle on the grounds of his magnanimous attitude for the most respectable Bhishma and his relatives. So Arjuna could say, it is not weakness, it is not impotence, it is not pettiness of any sort or low-class character. This is my high-class quality of magnanimity and generosity. Because, who am I supposed to kill? I'm supposed to kill my elders, Bhishma, my relatives. But Krishna considered that sort of magnanimity mere weakness of heart. And therefore, Arjuna replies to this possible question by Arjuna's further explanation. Arjuna said, O killer of enemies, this is very interesting, O Madhusudan, Arisudan, O killer of Madhu, how can I counteract with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? I should not be shooting arrows at these men. They are my grandfather. They are worshipable superiors. Rather, I should be offering flowers to them. Oh, Madhusudan. Oh, Arisudan. So it is not weakness of heart, says Arjuna. It is not anything but my magnanimity. And subtly, in this verse is an interesting point in Krishna. Arjuna calls Krishna two names, Madhusudan and Arisudan. Sudan means killer, and Madhu means the demon named Madhu. But also, in Krishna's own dynasty, the Yadu dynasty, there was one of his forefathers called Madhu. So one of Krishna's relatives is called Madhu. And yet also there is a demon named Madhu. So Arjuna is calling Krishna Madhusudan. You are the killer of Madhu. You have one relative named Madhu, and there is a demon named Madhu. You are asking me to kill my relatives. Which Madhu did you kill? Did you kill the Madhu who is your relative, or the Madhu who is a demon? So therefore, first Madhusudan, and then which one? Arisudan. He killed the Madhu who was the enemy, the demon Madhu. So Arjuna is telling Krishna here, yes, it's nice that I have to kill, but look who I have to kill. I have to kill my relatives. You have killed Madhu, but it wasn't your relative Madhu who you have killed. You have killed your enemy Madhu. If it was just enemies that I would have to kill, I would very gladly enter on the battlefield and kill them. But look who I have to kill again. It is Bhishma. It is Drona. These people are worthy of my worship. How could you ask me, O Madhusudan, O Arisudan, how could you ask me to kill them? This is my goodness of heart. I would not kill them for the world. And then the question could be asked, even if Arjuna doesn't want to kill them for the world, then how will he live if he doesn't have a kingdom? And the answer is, by begging he could live. And that's what he's thinking. It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. So in the Vedic culture especially, especially in those days, even 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when someone was a teacher in society, or even a doctor, or a lawyer, or a parent, any respectable elder person in society, the inferior person would offer him full respect. Teachers, they're not respectful to the government leaders, they're not respectful to anyone, there is no respect given. But in Vedic times, it was considered so improper, and this was so deeply bred into the culture, into the hearts of everyone. No one would even dare speak a harsh word, an angry word, a disagreeable word to one's superiors, parents, teachers, grandfathers, completely respectful. Even today, you will see it less and less in the cities of India, but in the villages you'll see it, and sometimes everywhere you'll see it where there is still some culture. You'll see it that when the man, he may be 20 years old, he may be 30 years old, he may be 40 years old, he may be 45 years old, he may be 50 years old. When he sees his father or he sees his mother first thing in the morning, he immediately touch the feet of his worshipful superior. And immediately the father or superior embraces and gives him affection. This is respect. This is veneration. This is culture. So in the same culture in which Arjuna brought up, where one is taught and it is deeply imbibed in one's consciousness that one should completely respect one's superiors, and now Arjuna is being asked to shoot arrows into the hearts of great souls like Bhishma and Drona. Practically inconceivable. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. Even if they attacked, they should not be counter-attacked. It is the general etiquette that superiors are not to be offered even a verbal fight, even if they are sometimes harsh in their behavior. They should not be harshly treated. Then how is it possible for Arjuna to counteract them? Would Krishna ever attack his own grandfather Ugrasena or his teacher Sandipani Muni? These were some of the arguments offered by Arjuna to Krishna. So therefore he says, it is better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though they may have committed some fault and they are on the battlefield to gain the kingdom and they may be desiring worldly gain, still they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we will enjoy will be tainted with blood. But herein again, where Arjuna is saying, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood, we can see that his mood is how will we be able to enjoy properly. His mood, his reasoning, his consciousness is still not fixed as to the as it should be for an Aryan, for one who is a Vaishnava, a devotee of Krishna, who is making advancement in Krishna consciousness. Another argument by Arjuna in text 6. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet, they are now standing before us on the battlefield. So, if he would win, he would lose, he is thinking, because these people who he loved so much, he would have the kingdom, but their loss, he could not see them every day, he could not be with them, so that would be another loss, and there would be no meaning to his being able to be the king of the kingdom. And on the other hand, if he lost, he would be the loser as well, because he would be dead. So in either case, he thought he could not win in this battle. And also, as another argument, he said, we don't even know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. Because the kingdom was going on, ruled by Duryodhana, it is not that there was a great there were not calamities going on. The rules of government were being followed. There were no thieves. Duryodhana was a strong ruler. So what is the use of undergoing all this killing and all this fighting, all the bloodshed, and we don't even know which is better? The kingdom is going on now. Will we be able to do better? Another mundane argument. Actually, it is mundane. So many calculations. So therefore, in the next verse, a very, very famous verse, especially the last line of it. Karpanya doshopahatta svabhava pritschami tvam tamasamudha cheta yatstayam syanitstitam bruvatan me shishyashteham sarimam tam prapanam. Now I am confused about my duty, and I have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please, purport. By nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. In every step there is perplexity, and therefore it behooves one to approach a bona fide spiritual master who can give one proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. All Vedic literatures advise us to approach a spiritual master to get free from the perplexities of life, which happen without our desire. They are like a forest fire that somehow blazes without being set by anyone. Similarly, the world situation is such that perplexities of life automatically appear without our wanting such confusion. No one wants fire, and yet it takes place, and we become perplexed. The Vedic wisdom therefore advises that in order to solve the perplexities of life and to understand the science of the solution, one must approach a spiritual master who is in the disciplic succession. A person with a bona fide spiritual master is supposed to know everything. One should not, therefore, remain in material perplexity, but should approach a spiritual master. This is the purport of this verse. So Arjuna had so many arguments. He was in a difficult situation. He saw that he was in a situation that Prabhupada is calling perplexing, meaning there was no way he could win. If he fought, he would lose. And if he didn't fight, he would lose. If he won, he would lose. If he lost, he would lose. So when one is in a situation where one can't see how he can win, one naturally becomes perplexed. He doesn't know what to do. And despite all of Arjuna's arguments, despite all his reasonings, despite all his references to Shastra, compassion, etiquette, common sense, and good wishes towards his family members, the result of all his logic and argument and thoughts was simply that he was confused. And this is the actual situation of everyone in the material world. Actually speaking, the material world, with all its complexities, is set up specifically to confuse us. There is always pinching going on. Adibhautik, adidaivik, adikleshik. Either it's too hot, or it's too cold, or we have one person who hates us who's trying to give us trouble, or the mosquitoes are trying to bite us, or we have boils, or we have a headache, or our mind is disturbed, or this person is bothering us, or that person is bothering us. The materialist approaches these perplexities by trying to find material solutions, by thinking. He sees, in his illusion, he sees a roadblock. I have a boil on my nose, and if I didn't have this boil, I would be happy. So all I have to do is remove the boil, because it's causing me so much pain now. So I remove the boil, and thereby, for I'll be happy. And then the boil goes away, he spends this amount of money, goes to these doctors and this and that, and waits this amount of time, and the boil goes away, and he says, and he sees one other roadblock. The problem is that my car has a carburetor that isn't working properly. So if I get a new carburetor, or better still, I'll get a new car. And then that problem, I'll be able to go here, and he's imagining, if I just solve this one problem, then I see happiness right before me. So he gets the car, and then his child gets sick. And then he cures his child's sickness, and his leg hurts. And then his boss fires him. And then his great-great-grandmother dies. And then the dollar is devalued. And then this happens. And then he's got a headache for this. And then he gets sick, and his friend's brother's uncle gets sick. And someone borrows his money and doesn't give it back. And one after another, Adi Kleshik, Adi Daivik, Adi Bhotik. It starts raining on us. So we're thinking that I'm so hot, only if it rains, then I'll be cool. And then it rains, and then we're cool, and then we put on the fan, and then we get sick like that. So we wish it was hot again, and then it goes away and it's hot again. But then we're just on and on. Instead of trying to remove the miseries of this material world, we must understand that misery is the very nature of the material world. It is impossible, impossible, impossible. Abrahma bhuvanar loka punaharvatana arjuna. It is impossible to find a good situation in this material world that is not miserable. So to become free from perplexities, one has to get out of the material world. And this type of intelligence that this material world, as Prabhupada has so aptly put it, is not a place for a gentleman. It is cruel. It is a cruel place. We say Mother Nature, but we should understand that mothers generally, Kali Yuga, it is like Mother Nature. Because mothers do kill their own children in the womb. But nature is cruel. It is not like mother. It is not kind like we think of our mother. There is jiva, jiva, so jivanam. One living entity is food for another. Either grossly eating their bodies or subtly. Exploit. It is the very nature of the material world that it is miserable. Whether we are married or unmarried, Prabhupada said, you are feeling disturbed because you are not married, so you want to get married, but you should understand that if you get married, you will also feel disturbed. So since you have to be disturbed in either case, better to be unmarried and disturbed than married and disturbed. This is the nature of the material world, that everyone is disturbed. And the only way to get free from disturbance is to get free from the material world. And to do that, and to get even this discrimination that there is no material happiness, it requires that one takes shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Arjuna was so intelligent, he had so many reasons, he had so much logic, he had so much facility at his disposal, he was such a powerful warrior. And when he applied all this to the perplexities of life, he simply was confused. Now I am confused about my duty, and I have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. So therefore, what is he doing? He's not saying, oh, I have another idea, maybe I'll try this, and maybe I'll try that. He says, in this condition, I'm asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered to you. Please instruct me. Now we should also note that Krishna did not instruct Arjuna until, he even waits a little bit after this, until Arjuna surrenders. Because there is no use instructing someone who is not going to follow those instructions. Prabhupada I heard him once say that unless you are going to follow the sadhu's instructions or heed his answer, there is no use asking him a question unless you will follow his answer. So Krishna didn't instruct Arjuna until Arjuna surrendered. And Arjuna is asking Krishna, you tell me what to do and I will follow. I'm giving up my own idea. This is very hard to do. Give up our own idea how we're going to be happy. But to make advancement, this is the first step. Rupa Goswami says, Ado Guru Parashray. The first thing, Ado, first, one has to seek the shelter of the lotus feet of a spiritual master. You tell me what I should do. I'm giving up my own idea. I no longer want to progress according to my own plan. I have realized that the nature of this material world is samsara dhava nalalita loka. It is the very nature of the material world is conflagration or forest fire, and it is always burning us. I am burnt. So when one actually comes to this realization, that is when one approaches a spiritual master. He gives up his own plan and he says, now you tell me what to do. I'm surrendered to you. Until one comes to that platform, one does not require a spiritual master. When one thinks that he can figure it out himself and he has the answers, then one will not surrender. And when one is not surrendering, there's no need of a guru. This platform of surrender is a very advanced stage, and it's actually the beginning of Krishna consciousness. So, the acharyas have commented that after Krishna or Arjuna has said, I surrender to you, shishyasyaham sarimam prapanam, I am in distress, I surrender to you, the spiritual master often he may test the disciple to see if he really understands and if he's really desirous of surrendering. So Krishna could be saying to Arjuna that why you don't need a spiritual master. You're in perplexity because of this battle that's coming up. Just do your duty, fight the battle, you'll have the kingdom, and then your problems will be solved. You don't need a spiritual master, you just need to fight. Fight, you'll win, no need of guru, just do your duty. Problem is you're not doing your duty, just do your duty and fight, you'll gain the kingdom. I guarantee that. I'll drive your chariot, make sure you win. No need of guru, just fight and win the kingdom, all your problems will be solved. And to answer that, Arjuna says, no Krishna, I can find no means to drive away this grief, which is drying up my senses. No means, not even the means that you are suggesting. I will not be able to dispel it, even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth, with sovereignty like the demigods in heaven. Because Arjuna presented so many arguments. So when someone is so intelligent, you tell them, you don't need a guru, you're so intelligent, just chalo, go, do something. But Arjuna is saying, no. Now I've actually understood. I've presented so many arguments, but I understood. They're all useless. Now you tell me. I'm accepting you as guru. These purports are very sweet, so we should read them very carefully. We won't go over them in detail now, but we should read them carefully. In the first verse in this chapter, there was a very nice purport by Srila Prabhupada, explaining why Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, who is Bhagavan, and Krishna is that Bhagavan. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That there are different realizations of the Absolute Truth, and Bhagavan realization of Krishna is the highest. So there is a fairly lengthy purport explaining that. And here, to this verse, the purport explains the necessity of approaching a spiritual master. and who is a spiritual master. Therefore, Prabhupada explains in the end of the purport to 8, if we want to curb lamentation for good, then we have to take shelter of Krishna, as Arjuna is seeking to do. So Arjuna asks Krishna to solve his problem definitely, and that is the way of text 9. Sanjaya said, having spoken thus, Arjuna, chastiser of enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight, and fell silent. He was so depressed, but he had surrendered. Evam yuktva Rishikesham, because Krishna is being addressed by Sanjaya as Rishikesh, the master of the senses, Rishika Isha. Rishika means senses, and Isha means master. So Krishna is the master of Arjuna's senses, and he has surrendered to Krishna. Arjuna surrendered to Krishna. Therefore, it is clear that Krishna will control the senses of Arjuna, and he will fight, even though right here he is saying, Govinda, I shall not fight. Again, Dhritarashtra was so happy when he heard that Arjuna will not fight. But Prabhupada explains in the purport, but Sanjay disappointed Dhritarashtra again in relating that Arjuna was competent to kill his enemies, Parantapa. Although Arjuna was, for the time being, overwhelmed with false grief due to family affection, he surrendered unto Krishna, the Supreme Spiritual Master, as a disciple. This indicated that he would soon be free from false lamentation resulting from family affection and would be enlightened with perfect knowledge of self-realization or Krishna consciousness and would then surely fight. Because we can see that Krishna's mercy is so great that he's arranged this whole entire episode to take place on a battlefield, because we are often ourselves in situations where it is so hard to do our duty. But no one can imagine a situation more difficult than Arjuna was in. First of all, fighting itself with bows and arrows and swords and different astras is a very fearsome situation. And look who he was fighting, and his duty was calling him to fight with the ones he loved the most within this world. And yet his duty was calling him to do that. And even more than that, Krishna, who was acting as his guru, was asking him or ordering him to fight. So sometimes we think that our duty is very hard to do, that it is very difficult to do something on the order of Guru and Krishna. But then we should remember Arjuna and how difficult his duty was. And none of us will be able to say that our duty is more difficult than Arjuna's duty. We also have to give up our petty weakness of heart, Vidya Dolavam. So Arjuna's example is so pertinent and sterling for that reason, because no one can even imagine a situation that would be more difficult than Arjuna's. So therefore, we have no excuse to avoid surrendering and doing our duty. And the last verse that we'll speak about, Tamu Vacha Rishikesha Prahasan Eva Bharata Senayo Ubayo Madhye Vishidhanta Midam Vacha. So in the O descendant of Bharata, at that time Krishna, smiling in the midst of both the armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna, Prabhupada explains in the purport. The talk was going on between intimate friends, namely Rishikesh, the Rishikesh, and the Gurukesh. As friends, both of them were on the same level, but one of them voluntarily became a student of the other. Krishna was smiling because a friend had chosen to become a disciple. As Lord of all, he is always in the superior position as the master of everyone, and yet the Lord agrees to be a friend, a son, or a lover for a devotee who wants him in such a role. But when he was accepted as the master, he at once assumed the role and talked with his disciple like the master, with gravity as it is required. So this word prasan actually means like smiling, because there is a conjunction, what's called a rasa sandhya, a conjunction of two different relationships with Krishna that takes place in this verse. That Arjuna was Krishna's friend, so they had some friendly relationship, and now he is becoming Krishna's disciple, which is more parental. So the mood of friendliness and jokingness that has Krishna smiling is leaving. And a more grave countenance is spreading across Krishna's face, not with a smile, because he's just about to instruct and chastise Arjuna. So when one is teaching, one cannot chastise heavily while wearing a big, light, friendly smile. It does not work. Sometimes with children, if you say to them, "Oh, you're the most horrible child I ever met," and you say it in a light way, they will feel very happy. You can say something nasty, but say it in a sweet way, and of course the younger children, and they will take it very nice, like you are complimenting them. But if you say, "I love you," they'll start to cry. So it is how one is saying something, not what is one saying. So because Krishna was about to chastise Arjuna, his smile is changing, so it's prahasana, it's like a smile. It's changing from a smile to gravity. And then the next verse in the next section, which we'll read and do the homework for tomorrow, it begins with chastisement by Krishna to Arjuna, and then some very important instructions, the most basic instructions of the Bhagavad Gita. Just on time. A few minutes of questions.
Yeah, I just want to understand this point that Srila Prabhupada says in the book about the text number 10, second chapter, that the talks of Bhagavad Gita are not for any person, particular person, society, community, but they're for all, and friends or enemies, and equally entitled to hear. Are equally entitled to hear them. And somewhere else he says that it is clearly stated that the Gita was specially meant for the sentient kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the denominated person who would dissipate its body for no one's benefit.
Who what? Who
Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demonic persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims.
The idea is that the Bhagavad Gita as it is meant for everyone. But if a demonic person takes the Bhagavad Gita and interprets it according to his whim, then he will lose the Bhagavad Gita. It won't become the Bhagavad Gita. It will become something else, and it will not have any potency. And they will use the Bhagavad Gita to spread their own nonsense. Prabhupada gives the example that there was this Dr. Radhakrishnan, quite dead now, the ex-president of India. There is in the famous verse where Krishna says, "Man mana bhava man bhaktam madhyaji mam namaskuru," where he says that you just become my devotee, you worship me, you surrender to me. This rascal says that it is not unto Krishna who you should worship. Krishna says, "Man mana bhava mad bhakto," you think about me, engage your mind in me, and you become my devotee, my devotee. And this person says it is not unto Krishna who you have to surrender. It is unto the unborn, unmanifest within Krishna. So it is not meant, Bhagavad Gita is not meant for the demonic interpretation of people who don't value the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's own words, who will minimize Krishna's words. It is meant for anyone, friend or enemy, but they must accept the Bhagavad Gita as Arjuna is accepting the Bhagavad Gita with surrender, not with interpretation. That is the meaning. It is especially meant for the saintly kings, because if the saintly kings hear the Bhagavad Gita, they will preach the Bhagavad Gita to all their citizens and rule according to the Bhagavad Gita. So everyone will get the benefit of the Bhagavad Gita. But the Bhagavad Gita's benefit is for everyone, and anyone can take advantage of it, friend or enemy, this or that, it doesn't make any difference if we just surrender and take it as it is, and then the medicine will have its effect. Is that clear? Or no?
Why does Krishna say on the second text number two, that this attitude leads to
a kirti, a svargam,
infamy?
Because if Arjuna runs away from the battle, this will come out in the third chapter. Arjuna is a warrior. What does infamy mean? No, it doesn't mean not fame. It means that you are famous as being low class and horrible, like a great killer, you know, a big thief gets his picture in the newspaper and he becomes infamous. It's famous for improper activities. So Arjuna is a famous warrior. He is known. Everyone knows how powerful he is. And if he runs away from the battlefield, if he leaves, and he says, I'm leaving out of compassion. Don't worry, I'm leaving out of compassion. Do you think the other warriors on the other side are going to say, Arjuna is so brave, he's leaving out of compassion? No, what are they going to say? He is a coward. Arjuna is such a great hero. He is a coward. So he will become infamous, famous all over the world as a coward. So his going from the battle, as he is proposing, will bring him infamy. He will be known as a coward, a runner from the battle, instead of a great warrior. And it will not bring him swaga, because if he dies in the battle, he would get swaga. He won't get back. There are two ways he can leave the battlefield. One is dead, and the other is running. If he leaves as a dead person, he will leave and go to swaga. If he leaves by running with his back facing the opposing army, he will be called a coward, and he will get a kirti. And for a Kshatriya, this is very heavy. Their whole nature is set up. They need glory. They cannot be cowards so that they can rule properly. They're trained like that, with courage, with chivalry, with character.
How could Krishna hold this situation for a couple of hours that he could teach in Bhagavad
Gita? What do you mean, how could he? Who could stop him if he wants to?
Because they were all waiting for Krishna, right? I mean, all the demons were interested in the speech as well.
It says they benefited, people benefited. Everyone was able to hear this somehow or another.
But does it say where, how long time is that?
It took 700 verses long, an hour or two maybe. Sometimes I've heard Prabhupada say an hour at most, but you would have to speak very fast to say Bhagavad Gita in 1 hour. Hour or two? How could Krishna do it? He's holding up so many planets, why can't he hold up the battle? He can do whatever, remember, after all, he's Krishna, he's God, he can do whatever he likes. What to do? Last question. First of all, they all got to see Krishna. That is not only the benefit, but that is the goal. To get the association of Krishna is the most wonderful thing. So somehow or another, by them coming to this battlefield, they got some association with Krishna. Because everyone looked. Look how Krishna is driving the chariot of Arjuna. And they saw him, beautiful, with his long, curly, brown, blackish hair, with his beautiful face, the color of a monsoon cloud full of water that was covered with dust. The drops of perspiration on his face made him even look more beautiful. Bhishma Dev describes this. So they got to see Krishna. So that in and of itself is beneficial. Also they heard Bhagavad Gita. And even if they died in Krishna's presence. and therefore they were benefiting.
Have they heard that Bhagavad Gita?
Had who? They? Everyone. It seems like they heard. I think Prabhupada mentions it in one purport. Yes? Okay, tomorrow, do the next homework. Has everyone taken these, the ones you just brought?
Yeah.
And also we're going to have the test next Sunday. It will be on chapters 1 and 2. So it's a lot. Hopefully we'll finish all of chapter 2. So you should prepare.